The title of today's sermon on this High Day, the first day of the Feast of Tabernacles, is Fundamentally Transforming America. Last night we saw in the opening message that was entitled Children of the Kingdom, and I tried to have a surprise scripture in there. I know you've all seen it before, but we all know that the sheep are separated from the goat, the wheat is separated from the tares, the haves from the have-not, the foolish virgins from the wise and so forth like that. But the children of the kingdom, I tried to have it sneak up on you a little bit with all the scriptures talking about how wonderful the kingdom is going to be. But what difference does it make if we're not going to be there? And then the one I call the surprising scripture when it says the children of kingdom shall be cast out into outer darkness, there shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. And you go, whoa, what's that all about? And it shows us that there's this 50-50, God uses 50-50, you know, five wise virgins, five foolish virgins, you kind of get 50-50 out of that, that God is very serious and not mocked about who's going to make it to the kingdom. So we're here keeping the Feast of the Tabernacles, but the most important thing is that we be there when that is established. The title of today's sermon is Fundamentally Transforming America. And the reason I'm bringing this up is because I believe, brethren, that we have reached a turning point in our history. And I've toyed with this a number of times and debated with myself about what year did we reach our pinnacle, the maximum of our success, and start back down. But I am convinced that we have, that America's greatness, the sun has begun to set. It is no longer on us. So we ask ourselves, what are our expectations as we enjoy God's commanded convocation and we come here to keep the Feast of Tabernacles? America is not going to be the same forever. That's a reality. I think, and the reason I'm addressing this is I believe that in the churches of God, the scattered churches of God, the greater mass of God's people that are now separated, and we touched on that last night, I think there is a degree of complacency. And God knew that it would be in the book of Revelation. He used that word. Nobody wants to be a Laodicean. We all want to be Philadelphians or better. We want to be the ones that have this good relationship with God. And yet, God very clearly tells us that when we come to the end time, this lethargic, this lackadaisical attitude, nature, is the one that characterizes the church of God. And I believe what I see in the church of God is this acceptance of the world and things as though, okay, there's problems, but there's good and there's bad, so things are humming along like they always have. I think we need to stop and realize, as I mentioned in the offertory message, that there is almost nothing in our world, in our society, that is done in a godly way. I'd like to go to 2 Peter chapter 3 as we begin today. I think that things have taken a turn for the worse. And not only have they taken a turn for the worse, I think it's rapidly becoming worse and worse. 2 Peter chapter 3, and I'd like to begin in verse 3, where we see this concept where people say, we have a lot of time before the kingdom of God. I just read where one of the ministers who heads up one of the churches of God says, it looks like we've thought Christ was going to come back too soon and we actually have quite a bit more time. I think that's a dangerous concept. 2 Peter 3 and verse 3. Knowing this first, that there shall come in the last days, I submit to you, these are the last days, scoffers walking after their own lust, or mockers. Now, I don't think that this is somebody specifically that's going around with a cocky attitude. I tend to think of somebody scoffing as, and this is, of course, King James translators. I think what this is saying is people are having an attitude. They're thinking, everything's pretty much the same. It's been this way my whole life. There's always been people that said, transportation's bad, traffic's bad, everything's bad. It's always been that way. Verse 4. But here's what they say, and here's what the attitude is. Where is the promise of His coming? It's an attitude in God's people that says, I've got time. I've got plenty of time. Where's the promise of his coming? For going all the way back to Abraham and the fathers. For since the fathers fell asleep, all things continue as they were from the beginning of creation. No, brethren, I submit to you, and I'll give you some evidence, hope not too much, that things are coming to a head, that things are not as they have always been since the very beginning. I think it's rapidly changing. Never in my lifetime have I witnessed such rapid and potentially dangerous events happening. And I don't know if you watch the evening news or the morning news or whatever it is, but just in the last 3-4 weeks coming up to the Feast of Tabernacles, it seems like there was a crescendo, just a buildup of horrible setbacks. If we were a superstitious people that says once the tide turns, you get it in the neck. That's the way the news have been. God has given us this Feast of Tabernacles to heighten our expectations, to look forward, to motivate us right now, because as I touched on in some of the other messages, we still have to go through trumpets. That's when everybody on earth dies, except for the very elect. And Christ cuts those days short. There's a rough row to hoe between today, when we're keeping the Feast of Tabernacles, and when Christ comes back to establish the Feast of Tabernacles, the millennium on this earth. That'll be the wonderful world tomorrow, and God's way will cover the entire earth. I can remember back all the way in the 1970s, especially, when it came time for the Feast of Tabernacles, there was in the Church of God, I believe, in the church then, a great expectation that Christ's return was imminent. And the strange thing that I want to bring out in today's message, I think that we as a church body felt that it was more imminent in 1970 than we feel that it's imminent today. I think the church today has gotten complacent and comfortable, and they're not thinking about that. Now, you might say, well, my expectations of the demise of this country come about because of all the terrible things that we've seen recently. So there are all kind of world events. There's been wars. There have been financial crises. There's an increase in terrorism and earthquakes. And there's a rise in Muslim insurgency. And all these things that almost dull our senses because they're coming at us so fast and furious. But this was once a great nation. It was founded by our founding fathers, and I believe that God gave us our founding fathers. We'll touch on that a little bit today. But America has become filled with corruption at the highest levels. We have a Congress that is spineless. They're not directing this country. Those who do not recognize what's going on are destined to repeat their history. And God tells us to have our eyes open. He tells us to watch. And there are things that we watch. The world that we walk around in right now, the people that we have our day-to-day business with, they continue to war against the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. That's the true God. My ancestors came from Germany in the late 1700s, and they came to America to escape religious persecution. And they went across this country, and they went out to Nebraska, and they settled in Nebraska. And they didn't have many of the comforts of life. They dug a hole. They used the sod to make their roof. They didn't have things like Charmin, electricity, running water. In fact, they were out there within 15 years of when Custer was out there. But they found something that they didn't have in the old country. They found a new life. They found a world of hope. I think if you and I were stuck in a hole like that in Nebraska, we wouldn't have much hope. But for them, they had religious freedom. They could believe in God. They could worship God. They could know their God. They had Bibles and so forth. And they had men, very early on, men of character that God gave us. We didn't start off with the Magna Carta. We inherited that from our brothers in England. But it was based on law. And law is based on God. And we get those laws in the commandments. And we find them in the Old Testament. And this nation was founded on those godly type principles. Those laws of freedom are enshrined in our Bill of Rights. But today they're being quickly embattled. They're being attacked and eroded away by God haters who are waging a war on God. And it's almost simplistic. I mean, the silliest thing, like some football team that you and I don't care about might have a cross on his helmet or something like that. And the next thing you know, everybody's up in arms to sue him and everything, and it's against separation of religion and government. And they carry it to the extreme. But they are so anti-God, they don't want any semblance of anything religious to remind them of God. It's just their way of life. They want God erased from every facet of our American culture. They don't want any Bibles in military hospitals. See, they have the say over that. They don't have the say yet over Motel 6. You can still find Bibles there. But no prayers for cheerleaders before football games, no plaques in school with God's name. You certainly can't have prayers before a government meeting because, you know, that's government. They want the Ten Commandments removed from every government building. You know, you could go on and on. And yet, at the same time, have you noticed that it's okay to build mosques anywhere that you want? I mean, they get the go-ahead. They get the shoe-in. It is okay also for the United States Air Force Academy in Colorado to build a pagan, satanic Wicca altar on government property for their witches and warlocks or whatever their pagan priest is to practice their ungodly Wicca rituals. They can do that on government property. So it's not religion that they're against. It's the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob that they're against. And so what we see is good being made evil. Today, we're looking at the world tomorrow when Jesus Christ will have come back and he will end this travesty. We need him to come back. We need him to come back quickly. But I'm of an age now where I can remember when things were vastly different. And many of you can too. 30 years ago, every candidate in America, when he ran for office, if he had only the slightest chance or hope that he could win, he was for mom and apple pie, right? He was also automatically, he stood for God and for country and for law and for order and for justice. Today, those who are winning elections stand against those things. They stand for lawlessness, and they still are shoo-in for governments. Let's go to Genesis chapter 12, brethren, and we're going to apply this to America today because we're talking about America being fundamentally transformed right before our eyes. And God knew that it was going to happen, and God said that it was going to happen. He predicted it. He prophesied it. Genesis 12 and verse 2, God says, I will make of you a great nation. Okay, Jesus Christ lived 2,000 years ago. Abraham lived 2,000 years before that. And yet God said, I will make of you a great nation. Now, we're not going to do the math today, but 2,520 is a pretty important number, and you can study those times as they're spelled out in the Bible. But in 1803, this nation began to be blessed tremendously. Thomas Jefferson was the president, and God's window of heaven was opened up on this nation. He says, I, this is God, will make of you a great nation. Now, it's popular, and I might repeat this today, it's popular to believe that God didn't make this nation, that this nation was stolen from third world nations that were doing real good and now they're poor nations because it was stolen. This says, the Bible says, therefore it's the truth, God says, I will make of you a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great. You shall be a blessing. I will bless them that bless you. Okay, anybody that did business with the United States of America did good. You didn't want to have anything to do with us. You didn't do so good. I'll curse him that curses you. That's what it means. And in you, all the families of the earth shall be blessed. And so, who's being blessed by America today? We put sanctions on some countries that we don't like today. At the Constitutional Convention back in 1787, Benjamin Franklin, he addressed then President George Washington. He was passionately pleading You know what he's pleading for? Can't we start our official business with a prayer? Back in 1887, he wanted to begin each day of the convention with prayer, to ask for assistance from heaven and a blessing on their deliberations as these men were building what became America. But Benjamin Franklin said, "Mr. President, I have lived, sir, a long life, and the longer I live, the more convincing proofs I see of this truth, that God governs in the affairs of men. And if a sparrow cannot fall to the ground without his notice, is it probable that an empire can rise without his aid?" Now, pause just a second. Don't want to interrupt this thought, but could you imagine a congressman or a senator or a representative talking like this today to the president, to their fellow members of Congress? Benjamin Franklin continues speaking to George Washington. "We have been assured, sir, in the sacred writings," he's saying on Capitol Hill, referring to the Bible, "we have been assured, sir, in the sacred writings, that unless the Lord build a house, they labor in vain that build it." In other words, he's saying, we need God on our side, don't we? And Benjamin Franklin continues, "I firmly believe this," the Bible, "and I also believe that without his concurring aid, we shall succeed in this political building no better than the builders of Babel." You see, Babel didn't have God on their side, and so they were scattered over the face of the earth. So there was a time in this country, not so long ago, when God was involved in pouring out his blessings on America. But I submit to you today, that's fundamentally changed. It's rapidly changing, radically changing. There was a time when we won all of our wars, every single war. This isn't in my notes, but I remember Herbert W. Armstrong saying, "On the authority of Jesus Christ, America has won her last war." He said that during the Vietnam era. And I thought, wow, that's really something that he would step out and say that. Surely America is great. We still had lots of aircraft carriers. We were the only ones with supersonic fighters at the time and spy satellites and everything. We're going to win more wars. How many wars have we won since Vietnam? We tucked tail and ran from Vietnam, and we've been doing the same thing ever since. We don't win wars. God's not putting the enemy to rout before us. Put this in your notes. Genesis 14 and verse 20 is another aspect from God. "And blessed be the Most High God, who has delivered your enemies into your hand." It's not happening today as we look around at what's going on in this world. It's fundamentally transformed. We have to ask ourselves, are we being protected as America was once protected? We certainly weren't protected on 9/11 when we lost the World Trade Centers. 30-some-odd years ago, when I stopped voting in political elections, every single candidate back then declared his belief in God, and it's changed. Today, our radical views, or the radical views of our national leaders, are just the opposite. America was beaten back out of the bushes. For 1,000 years, the Native Americans didn't make anything of this land. God gave us this land. America was not the greatest world power by accident. God says that he was going to do it. God bestowed the blessings because we are the birthright Israelites, heirs to the promises, those who were predominantly the founders of America. Now, that's changed. I saw a statistic just 3 weeks ago, and it said that of the descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, they talked about the Irish and the French and the English and some of those people, that the death of those people in America, if you look at the statistics and the demographics, the deaths exceed the births. The descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob are no longer increasing in America. We've reached a time when the numbers alone would tell the tale. Throughout America's history, there have been men of vision with the courage to forge an exceptional nation out of a primitive wilderness. What is the driving force behind America's meteoric ascent to greatness? If you hung out a sign today, remember what it said on the Statue of Liberty? I don't remember exactly, but it's, you know, give me your poor and your homeless and send them here and we'll take them. That's a bad paraphrase. But I think if you had to step forward to today and put a sign out, it'd be something like America's for sale, America's free for the taking, our borders are open, our wealth is hemorrhaging. America is going down the tubes. It doesn't seem like that to a lot of people, but you start looking at the statistics, we are getting close to our demise. We'll talk about that some more at this feast, because it's important to believe, because if we think that all things continue as they always have, God says we better watch out. So our nation, the greatest nation that's ever existed, cherished by many, is a thing of the past. The great American dream has become a nightmarish scenario of decadence, ruin, deterioration, decay, debt, decline, devastation. We don't like to paint it so. Nobody likes to cover Detroit. When I was a little kid, Detroit was a big thing. We were building some pretty nice cars, and we were number one in the world. And now the place is bankrupt. It's gone to weed. It's changed. And that's a picture of America if we could see what's really going on. I know when the new iPhones come out and when all the fancy glitter comes out and you watch the evening news and there's the rich and the famous. It's not a true picture of the American morale anymore. There's something very, very sick at the core of America right now. There's a reason that America has begun to tumble from its pedestal. It's one high and lofty pedestal that we were on. No more can Americans walk with pride in the rest of the world. It used to be that you could. I think now that Americans are beginning to hang their head in shame, having lost the pearl of great price. Let me just throw out a couple of facts, just for your consideration. This is not to be a downer, but this is reality, and we need to face it, because in the Church of God, I don't see the leaders crying aloud and sparing not and saying, the handwriting is on the wall, back in the days of Nebuchadnezzar. In fact, he heard the words to all of that music. That would have been very meaningful. But in Kentucky, just the other day, mosques and Islamic centers are replacing once, quote-unquote, Christian churches. They're on the rise, and the churches are on the decrease. They're being occupied by the Muslims. Now, I want you to put in your notes Daniel 11 and verse 40. There's some obscure language there about one group, one king, one leader pushing at others. Has the push begun? Is there a push that's taking place? I know that just in the last few weeks, when I see, and I haven't watched the videos on this, all I've ever seen is a man fully covered except for a slit for his eyes with a knife at the throat of somebody in an orange suit, and then we're told this person was beheaded. That pushes at me when I see that. I'll come back to that in just a minute. The religious makeup of the Bible Belt that comes right through this part of the country is rapidly changing, with declining membership in all the Christian organizations and congregations. And they're seeing an increased participation and involvement in Islam and a few others. What's happened to the America? What's happened to the America that was number one in everything? When I went to Pasadena, I'd already worked a career in construction. I was driving out to Pasadena, I was listening to the radio, talk radio, news, and I heard a statistic. It said, there are 300,000 Muslims in America. Some of you may have heard me mention this before. 300,000 Muslims in America. This was 1986, 87, right in there. And I thought, wow, we only have 150,000 in God's church worldwide, and there's twice that many Muslims in America. Well, right now, in God's church worldwide, I don't know how many we had. If we used all the inflated numbers, what would it be? 30, 40,000? I don't know. How many true members, if you weeded out the tares, which we're not going to do. We'll talk about that during the feast. How many true members of God there are? But yet there are 10, 12 million more Muslims. That's part of a push that's taking place. And these Muslims, I want you to have your eyes open, brethren, because it's not politically correct to talk about this. Therefore, you're not going to hear it in most of the churches of God. It's not politically correct. But the Muslim people that are in America, the Islamic Americans, they are Muslim first, then they're Americans, but only when it's politically expedient. And the reason for that, I submit to you, is because they are a fearful people. They are. They don't appear to be. They seem to have a pride about them. They're not fearful of America. They are fearful of their own, who retaliate in dreadful ways. And the proof of this came out when radical Islamic terrorists, we all know they took down those trade centers on 9/11. In that same day, they also hit the Pentagon, and they came short of hitting their third objective, maybe the White House. Not only, and I want you to think back, not only did the Muslim Americans not speak out against that, they were mute, they were quiet. They didn't say a thing against radical Islamic extremists. To this day, the Muslim Americans will not condemn the radical Islamic terrorists anywhere. Oh, I know there are one or two notable exceptions. You might see those on the news sometimes. But the populace, this 10 or 12 million of them, when they get together, they don't speak out, they don't condemn it. Because we'll see, and I haven't watched the news since I've been here at the feast, but there are entire towns. I've heard people say that there's going to be slaughters of biblical proportion because America's not doing anything to help. Some of these people are Christians that go back to the time of the apostles. They're Christians that don't understand everything that we're privileged to understand. But there are people being wiped out. These Islamic radicals will wipe out other Muslims that don't meet their radical status or nature. And so Islamic people, they won't stand up or condemn any of that action for fear of retaliation. That's what they fear. Our top leaders, beginning with our president, have set out, in their own words, to fundamentally transform America. And they're doing it by, first of all, circumventing the United States Constitution, defeating America's morality. Morality is not a good word to them. They're replacing Christianity with Islam. They're turning our once great country into the basest of third world countries. Why? Because they hate what America stands for. They don't believe in God. They don't believe that God is the one that, as we read in Genesis 12, they don't believe that God made this country great in fulfillment of his promise to our patriarch Abraham. God told Abraham, I will do it, and here's when I'm going to do it. And God did. I'll bless you and make you a great name. How many of you are familiar with the word taqiyya? T-A-Q-I-Y-Y-A. Doesn't even ring well with our ear. T-A-Q-I-Y-Y-A. We have a taqiyya president. We have a Kitman president. I want you to remember those words because you're going to hear them more and more. I only started hearing those words this year because I don't read the Quran. I don't understand their methodology. I don't know all of their tactics by a long shot. But Islam, the religion of Islam, allows, approves, condones two kinds of lying. Lying to non-believers because they think they're the believers. And they're permitted to lie to non-believers to further their goal. And those two ways of lying are taqiyya and kitman. That's why we hear so many statements that are known not to be true, and prove, in very short order, not to be true. And I was surprised this year to hear a very liberal law professor state, and I quote, this is from a liberal law professor here in a major college in the United States of America, our president is the danger the Constitution was designed to prevent. He's the danger that the Constitution was to prevent. Our president has chosen not to host ecumenical services in the East Room of the White House. He just says he doesn't want to do that, not even on the National Day of Prayer. He doesn't want to offend anybody. He's decided there will be no longer a National Day of Prayer held in May. Again, he doesn't want to offend anybody. But I want to ask you a question. Where was his concern about offending Christians when he allowed 2,000 Muslims to hold a day of prayer on the Capitol grounds? That's taqiyya. You say one thing and you do just the opposite. Another case. There was an occasion for a closing prayer at the White House. They've always done it that way. And the president chose the first openly homosexual bishop to lead the closing prayer. You know, that's like a slap in the face. I'm offended by that. God's offended by that. But the press isn't. I live in Little Rock. We recently had a military man killed right on the streets. He's just sitting outside of a recruiting office, and a Muslim drove by and shot him dead. You're familiar with one that made the news a whole lot more over in Texas, where 14 people were slain, actually 13 and a pregnant woman were slain by a terrorist that he was shouting, Allah Akbar, or Allahu Akbar, meaning God is great. It actually means to them that God is a greater God than the God of Israel. That's the implication. And so now, what are we seeing? We're seeing a rash of beheadings, even in Oklahoma City. You know, it's terrible what's going on. More than that, the Muslims are raping, enslaving, crucifying, torturing, beheading, and somehow they're being absolved of what's going on. Now, this is a world that we're in. Now, we're here this week to look at the wonderful world tomorrow. It's going to be a different world. This world that they're trying to bring right now is not what we want. They're being allowed to immigrate to America. The doors are open through diplomatic services, up through Mexico. They're coming back from the war with their passports. They're coming back to a nation that they routinely condemn, and they want to destroy it. And it's a strange kind of thing. They want to leave their country that has become depraved and come to America because of the blessings of America, but then they want to turn America into the depraved country that they left behind. That's what's going on. They have a diseased ideology. Who can say that Islam is not pushing, I emphasize that word, their depraved culture and lack of principles and perverted morality? They're pushing on America. They're also pushing on Europe in a very strong way and everybody else. Let's turn over to Leviticus chapter 26. How many of you have heard of the Ebola virus? It's not a major world crisis. Here in America, we have 100 million people that are not working. Half of our people are on welfare. Inflation's at 11%, if you want to know what the real number is, not the government-adjusted number. Beginning last month, we started bringing in sick children from Honduras and Guatemala, Mexico. There's another disease that's barely come up to the threshold of public opinion. It's called endurovirus. It's in 46 of the states right now. They know that four or five, before we left for the feast, four or five children have died from it. It's suspected in 17 deaths. That was the latest number that I saw of kids. It's actually hit us harder than Ebola has hit us. Why are these kind of diseases coming on America? This endurovirus paralyzes the children. It's akin to the polio paralysis, but they're hoping right now that the paralysis is not a permanent paralysis once the kids survive, the ones that do survive. And we're supposed to sleep well because the Centers for Disease Control, CDC, is supposed to be on top of all of this stuff. Why are these curses coming upon us? Leviticus 26 and verse 14. God says, but if you will not hearken unto me and will not do all these commandments, and if you despise my statutes, or if your soul abhors my judgments so that you will not do all my commandments, but that you break my covenant, I will also do this to you. I will appoint over you terror. Hold your finger there in Leviticus 26. Let's go over to Deuteronomy 28. I'm going to come right back to Leviticus 26. It shall come to pass, God says, that if you will not hearken unto the voice of the Lord your God, to observe and to do all his commandments in his statute which I command you this day, that all these curses shall come upon you and overtake you. Brethren, do we think that's going to happen to somebody else? America has taken a turn for the worse. America is being fundamentally transformed. That's what's happening. It's happening fast, and it's going to happen a whole lot faster as we come to the end, as we come to the end of this election cycle. There's a lot of things that are being restrained until the November elections get here, and then there's 2 years left. What we've seen with regard to the borders being opened and no longer enforced and those sort of things, those things are going to fail by comparison as to what's going to be happening in these last 2 years. America is being fundamentally transformed. We need to pray to God. We need to draw near to God. We have to have our eyes open. America is never going to be the same as it was before. There was a time when I thought, yeah, we'll come back out of this. In Deuteronomy 28 and verse 21, the Lord shall make the pestilence cleave unto you until he has consumed you off the face of the land. Go back and study Ezekiel chapter 5, just the first couple of verses there. One third of the population of the United States is going to be wiped out with these pestilences. Verse 22, Deuteronomy 28, verse 22, the Lord shall smite you with consumption and a fever and inflammation and an extreme burning. God put this in there for a reason. It's not going to happen to us, right? That's what the Israelites said as they were being carried off by Nebuchadnezzar. That's what the Jews said. It's not going to happen to us as they were being carried off into captivity. The Assyrians first and then the Babylonians carried them away. They didn't think it was going to happen to them. God has sent AIDS already as a warning to those who or emboldened to those of the godless inhabitants of our land. And it's only going to get worse. Leviticus 26 and verse 18 says, I'll punish you seven times more. That just means it's going to get worse and worse and worse. And so, brethren, that is what's coming. That's in Leviticus 26, 18. And then national captivity. Look at verse 33. I'll scatter you among the heathen and draw a sword out after you shall be desolate. When I was a little kid, you couldn't hardly play in the yard barefooted because of the honeybees. I didn't see a honeybee this summer. I don't know about you. I saw a few bumblebees working some flowers, but I didn't see a honeybee. There are people making their living that have some honeybees, hauling them around, trying to keep them out of the pesticide areas, that sort of thing. That's not a small thing, brethren. America's government is bereft of moral leadership and rational policy. Let me just run through some of these because I want you to think about them. We're going to have some interactive discussion, and as I mentioned last night, I need your feedback. I want to know what's on your mind, what's bothering you, what you are seeing, because I don't begin to see all of it, but it seems to me that every single major societal function is in imminent danger of breaking down. When I look at them, I don't care which one it is. It could be education, okay? I talk to those in education, and they say, it is worse than ever. It is becoming impossible. It is not able to be fixed. I hate to hear that. When I went to school with my little books and wrote things down, I was glad to be able to get an education. I'd like for our teachers to be happy and not overworked, and the kids actually getting an education that is morally based in God, in freedom, and those kind of things. I've already spoken about how government is broken down, and I don't need to go into the IRS losing all of their records. It came out just in the last 3 days that the Environmental Protection Agency, they've lost a whole bunch of their records and hard drives as well. The Centers for Disease said, well, you know, if we did find somebody with Ebola, we really wouldn't know where to send them. We have a bunch of people that are real good at drawing their checks and their expenses, and I don't know what else they're good at. Look at what's happened to our military. It's been decimated. We've already touched on health. Agriculture, we've touched a little bit on that. And I don't know what the GMOs, the genetically modified foods that's getting into everything. We don't even have laws in this country against GMOs. You could be eating jellyfish when you're eating peanut butter, and you're not even told. None of us are told. Great things are going on like that. Finance, you can't even go there. You look at the stock market going up and down and round and round, and it's a balloon that's going to pop like the housing bubble popped a while back and all the other bubbles pop. You look at what's happening to religion. Religion's on the back burner. The government thinks religion is the enemy. They think that the other things are fine, but religion's the enemy. All of these societal functions are in danger of collapsing. When I came into God's church, I fully believed that the preaching of the gospel around the world, it would change the world, and that the world would go, wow, that is so great, and accept it. And, you know, we'd welcome the return of the Messiah. I remember standing on the Pasadena campus back in 79 thinking, because at that time, Ambassador College campus, somebody would go around and say, this is the most beautiful campus in the world. And Ambassador won it a number of years. It was just beautiful. I was standing there, and I remember thinking, this is just a token of what the world tomorrow is going to be like. I thought that the gospel would go out more and more and change the world. Now, I've become very concerned for our nation. When will we reach our breaking point? Is it just going to snap, like if you took a ruler and bent it and just pop, and it's all over with, like the Great Depression? One day you're a millionaire, and the next day you're jumping out of a building. Is it going to be like that? Or is it going to get worse and worse and worse, like a man out of his job, and he uses up his savings, and he sells everything in the house, and then they move under a bridge, and finally you're in a cardboard box? How's it going to come on America? I think, this is just me, I don't see it in the Bible specifically, I think that it's going to come on us till where we hurt. The Israelites hurt before they left. They left town with a hook in their nose and in their tongue. They realize we have rejected God, we've broken His Sabbath, we've turned to idolatry. But what's going to be the straw that breaks the camel's back in America? What's going to be too much? What's going to make the lights go off? What's going to make the trucks quit running? What's going to make the elevators stop working? Let me throw out, in closing, let me just throw out a few cases in no particular order that to me seem to defy repair and revitalization as the sun sets on America. Because that's what's happening, brethren. The corruption in government has risen to the point that it cannot be contained. We've reached the point where those who are receiving, those who are getting, those who are in control are able to sustain their place in government, and that's not going to change. We even have a Department of Justice, the DOJ, that is basically lawless. Who are you going to be able to turn to? It can be great, disastrous breaches of law, and they won't do anything to help. In fact, they're part of things like Fast and Furious, selling firearms to the Mexicans. But and yet, you can't turn to them when you have a real cause. The IRS, in addition to destroying their files, they are turning against Christians. And we might think, oh, they won't turn to me. They'll miss me. I'll hide. They don't know I exist. Christianity is their enemy. They want to fundamentally transform America into a godless nation. And they'll use voter fraud and everything else. I don't need to go into the fact that the veterans that have fought for America have the books cooked against them and they can't get any help. Our high leaders in this country routinely lie to the American people. You're told you can keep your insurance, you can keep your doctor, your health rates are going to go back down by $2,600 a year. But see, that's that Takiya word, you know, you just tell people that to get into power. The one that bothered me a whole lot, and I don't know if it bothered you, but it should, is when it became law that the tax dollars of Americans would not be used for abortions. But to get it passed, the president had to take one congressman into a room set aside and promise him, no tax dollars of Americans will be used to fund abortions. The ink was not dry on that when, by executive order, it was turned around so that your tax dollars, your tax dollars, your tax dollars, which is politically incorrect to point, you know that, are used. It makes us complicit, makes me complicit in abortion. God hates abortion. That's an abomination in His sight. So this executive power is turning us into a veritable corrupt dictatorship. Terrible things are happening. You know, it's all lies and it's all deceit. In America, let me ask you this question. Do we deserve to be obliterated because we are just sitting idly by and letting this happen to America? Has the will of America, has the America that says, I love God, I trust in God we trust, are there so few of us left that America is no longer a godly country? That's what we're getting to, brethren. I have too many to go into. The NSA is spying on us. Homosexuals are taking over. ISIS is trying to build a world-ruling caliphate. NSA's listening to everything. I'm going to tell you one more story from my daddy, and then I'll close. Because each day, each week goes by, more people, more Americans are being beheaded. A few women have been beheaded now as well. And it's not just us. The British, the French have also lost some. But in the 1950s, my dad told me a story. He said, Warren, he said, I have complete trust and confidence in the government of America. And he told me, he says, if something happens, my dad was in the military before World War II and all the way through World War II, and I was a pretty big kid by the time my daddy came back from the war. He says, if something happens to one American anywhere in the world, the full faith, strength, and power of America will come to his aid. Just one America, anywhere. The entire strength and resources and power of the Army, the Navy, and the Air Force would immediately be employed for the rescue of that American. My dad had that faith and that trust and that confidence in America in the 1950s. I don't have that trust anymore. I don't know anybody that does. We've had one American sitting in Mexican prison for 6 months for making a wrong U-turn. You know, we can't do anything about that. Help you sleep better tonight. North Korea is test-firing missiles capable of nuclear hits. Luke chapter 21, brethren, in closing. You and I, we don't fight against these things. We stay out of the politics. But we're witnessing these things. We're seeing these things happen. America's being fundamentally transformed. America is going to be destroyed. We need a wonderful world tomorrow. We need the kingdom of God. We pray, thy kingdom come. In that little short outline that Jesus Christ gave the disciples, he said, pray, thy kingdom come. That's what we're celebrating this week. Jesus said, my kingdom's not of this world. It's yet future. The entire world is crying out for God to fundamentally change us. That's what the world is doing. Luke chapter 21, let's begin in verse 29. And he spoke unto them a parable. Behold the fig tree and all the trees. When they now shoot forth, it's when you have that new little green bud in the spring. What do you know? You know springtime's coming, right? So all these things that we're talking about today, when you see all these wars, when you see all of this deterioration, when you see America being fundamentally transformed and just deteriorating, God says, let's talk about a fig tree. Now when they shoot forth and you know, you see and you know of your own selves that summer is now near at hand. That's how you know. You see it a little, it's been wintertime and nothing on the stems all year long. You see these things come to pass. He says in verse 31, so likewise, in the same way, when you see all the things that we're talking about today, when you see these things, I'm in verse 31, when you see these things come to pass, know you that the kingdom of God is near at hand. Brethren, we're very, very close to the end. America has been fundamentally transformed. It's a new and a different world. It's going to get a lot worse. Your friends in the other congregations, tell them things are not the same. Don't expect them to be the same. Don't expect a recovery. We need to tighten our belts. We need to reduce our standard of living. I'm quoting Herbert W. Armstrong from the 1970s, okay? I thought, how do you reduce your standard of living when you got four kids going to school, you got six vehicles in your driveway, and you know you can't quit, and it seems like too much. Brethren, the handwriting is on the wall.